Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
The MVP debate, which what's interesting about MVP, and I think Drew Brees is going to win it. I'm pretty sure, matter of fact, Drew Brees is going to win it because Drew Brees is not going to play a game the rest of the regular season. And if he's not going to play a game the rest of the regular season, he's kind of rested his case, right? Like Drew Brees not playing in the last game of the season because they've clinched home field advantage throughout and have a bye. And why would you put him in harm's way? Drew Brees doing that, to me, is the it's the equivalent of not having to, the defense resting and not having to, put whoever the accused is on trial because they feel really good about the case. And that's essentially how Brees feels. He's got 32 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions, which are fantastic numbers. He's going to finish 8 yards shy of 4,000 yards. And while 4,000 used to be the demarcation of an incredible season, the fact is that right now there are already 9 quarterbacks with 4,000 yards, and Eli Manning is 2 yards away. Brees would get it if he played game 16. Deshaun Watson's going to get it as well. Hell, Derek Carr is a couple yards away, one big game against the Kansas City Chiefs away from getting 4,000 yards of his own. The numbers are good. The interceptions are low. The touchdowns aren't the highest. The interceptions aren't the lowest. The yards aren't the highest, but they're also not the lowest. They've been able to create balance. But the idea that he's had a better season, and look, the MVP is not the most valuable player. It's just not. If it was the most valuable player, that's got to be Andrew Luck. That roster's not great, and they got a chance, if they win on the road this weekend, to play in the playoffs after a slow and rocky start. And Andrew Luck, of course, who's got Comeback Player of the Year award locked up. Andrew Luck didn't touch the Duke, the football they use in the NFL, until after training camp had already begun. So that's how quickly he's risen to prominence. But if you want to go with numbers, you'd have to go with a guy like Mahomes or Matt Ryan, maybe Aaron Rodgers, although the touchdowns are way down. The interceptions are only 2. He's got a lot of throwaways as well. If you want to go with Drew Brees because they've won and his numbers are good and he's had a great career, that's fine. But the most valuable player is the guy who's had the best season. And Pat Mahomes has had the best season. Pat Mahomes is going to throw for 5,000 yards, or very close to. He's got 4,816. He's got 48 touchdowns. And he is a wizard back there. A wizard. A guy's going to throw for 50 touchdown passes, likely. Going to throw for 5,000 yards. His team, if they win, is going to have home field advantage throughout. The crazy part about the Brees thing is we're rewarding him for the fact his team has won, is going to get home field advantage throughout, when his defense is actually really good. And Mahomes, whose team is also very good and going to get the number one seed likely in the upcoming AFC playoffs, is getting no such reward. It's like, well, we know you've won a lot of games and you're probably going to win 12, which is more than anybody else in the AFC. But somehow we're going to hold it against you because you've lost 4 games because your defense stinks, all in prime time. I'm like, okay, I'm not really sure how this works. Last night's game was a ton of fun. And I guess he lost, but he threw for 273, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Did struggle against a really good defense. Week before, 243, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Look, he didn't play well in terms of turning the ball over against the Rams, but they still lost 54-51 in what, without any question, is the game of the year. I just find it interesting that for Breeze, he's getting the benefit of, hey, his team has won. I know his numbers are a little bit down, but his team has won. They have. So is Pat Mahomes. And winning two more games with a superior defense as opposed to Mahomes, I don't think an MVP does that make. Who's had the better year, Breeze or Mahomes? Nobody argues anything other than Mahomes, but Mahomes is not going to win it because Breeze has the number two in terms of losses right next to his name. That's the way we do things. By the way, we got David Gascon on the updates. The Gas Man, how does he have a fan club? Every time we have Gascon on, he has a fan club.
Doug, happy holidays to you, man.
Same to you, Gascon. Is that now, are those your burner accounts that you got there?
No, I don't have any burner accounts. I have one account and one account only. I'm not that popular to have multiple accounts.
All right. I just want to make sure it's not those family members that tweet at us every time. I just want to make sure I know exactly what that is.
We got some loyal listeners to the show.
All right,
that cool. Listen to you at all hours of the day. So if you're filling in for Dan Patrick, if you're filling in for Colin,
yeah, this is
Doug Gottlieb 360.
I know. This is a six hour, two national show day. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Let me give my take on Lamar Jackson. Okay. I know that you're going to be told by people. Here's what happens with people. The you were wrong people are amazing out there. They're really super amazing. And they're amazing because they don't even know what people are supposed to be wrong about. When Lamar Jackson came out of college, he and his mom completely screwed the whole thing up. Remember, he wouldn't run the 40 for anybody. He didn't have a real agent, so it was hard to get a hold of him for workouts. And he also didn't go work with any sort of quarterback guru to kind of refine some of the things that he was doing. No. He wanted to do a mom and pop thing and have his mom represent him. And it was, by all reports, a disaster. He wasn't prepared for the combine, wasn't prepared for the conversations he was going to have, and was way behind verbally and at the whiteboard. But there was never a moment where people said Lamar Jackson can't throw. Anyone who said they said he couldn't throw, that's not even close to what they said. They said he couldn't throw accurately enough, nor could he pick apart a defense in terms of going through his progressions enough at this point. That's not who he was. That he was an incredible running threat, so much so that teams did evaluate him as a wide receiver. I know a couple. And you're like, see, he's not a wide receiver. You're right. He's a quarterback and running back and wide receiver all in one. Look, he carried the ball 21, 11, 17, 14, 18, and 13 times. He threw the ball more than he ran the ball more than he's thrown the ball every game but once. Like, that never happens. And while he's 6'2", he's a little bit bigger than taller than you think. The fact is that he's thicker than Teddy Bridgewater, but he's not a thick dude, 212 pounds. No one said that he couldn't throw it. He can throw it 80 yards in the air. It was, does he know what he's looking at defensively and can he throw it accurately enough? His completion percentage to this point in time is 58.2%. That is not good enough in the NFL. And if you watch, it's a lot of the underneath and short throws that he just has terrible mechanics and just kind of flips the ball and it goes astray. That generally leads to turnovers. You can tell me all you want about he's really awesome and you don't get it, but he's got 6 touchdowns and 3 interceptions on the year. You know, of the last 6 games in which he started, they played the five of the worst defenses in the NFL, beat 4 of them, and then they beat the Chargers, mostly because of their defense. Look, I'm not sitting here telling you that he stinks. In the current way in which they're playing him, he's very, very effective. But there's a limit to how effective and how long you can be effective with that style. 1, people adjust. 2, you tend to get hurt. And 3, it's a style kind of like the wishbone in college where when you get behind, it's really hard to form a comeback. But anyone who starts their show saying, say, they said he couldn't throw a football, it's never been uttered by anyone. Everybody, it's can he throw a football? Like, look, if you watch all of the rookie quarterbacks, they're all living up to or down to any of their reputation. Did you watch Josh Allen yesterday? crazy inaccurate. That's not surprising because remember when Josh Allen was coming out of college, people said he's crazy inaccurate. Josh Rosen, not mobile, injury prone, but super, super refined. Sam Darnold makes plays running all over the place. Sometimes he turns it over a bit too much. And Baker Mayfield's upside was in question, but whether or not he could produce right away was never in question because he's as refined a quarterback as any we've seen coming out of that system. And that's a system where he played for 5 years in college. But what happens is when the Ravens get smart, shorten the game, try and keep Lamar Jackson out of third and long, when he runs it more than he throws it, they've given themselves a chance in these games. Now they got a chance to play in the playoffs, and their coach is going to stay gainfully employed. But long term, from Vince Young to RG3, you go around this league, Tim Tebow, the second year, second time around, once you get to the playoffs as well, really hard to win that way. And it's hard to stay healthy, especially if it's hard to stay healthy for Cam Newton. How do you think Lamar Jackson's going to hold up? Not great.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I don't even know what the next year's styles are. I know I'm not exactly a style maven. I do know that one of the things that's interesting about styles, you know, slacks now, or when you buy suit pants, they only come down to like your ankle bone, right? That's the style now. And once you've gotten to where you're in your 30s or 40s, or definitely when you're 50s, you've seen all these kind of styles come and go, although the high water slacks, so this is, they used to have to roll them up to get there for pants to be that high. Now that's the way they're cut. You know, but I've lived through everything from pleats to when you had cuffed pants to non-cuffed pants to now these pants. And of course, if you buy sweatpants, a lot of them only come down to your calves or just slightly past your calves. But not every body type fits every style. I one of the sayings you'll hear on this show is that yoga pants are a privilege, not a right. Not every woman needs to be wearing yoga pants. And that doesn't just mean, I'm not just discussing rotund women. I'm talking about all women. Not every woman needs to be wearing yoga pants. Not every guy needs to be wearing skinny jeans. You know, if one of the things I've always struggled with tightly cut pants is, hey, I got a big basketball booty. I don't belong in skinny jeans. My jeans can be tighter for my specific body type, but not for any body type, because if they are, I can't even get them on, let alone get them all the way pulled up and get them zipped up and, you know, so it's comfortable in my seat as well as across my waist. Like, that's just a hard thing for me. On the other hand, there are some guys that are really, really lean and it just works for them. Works for them. But it's your hair, the shape of your face. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the shape of your face is supposed to determine what kind of tie knot you have, what kind of collar you wear with a suit. All about the shape of your face. So when I see Baker Mayfield staring down Hugh Jackson, his former head coach, when I see him staring him down when he's playing well for the Cleveland Browns, and the Cleveland Browns have been playing much better football of late, I just think of the fact that though Baker Mayfield doesn't fit every roster and wouldn't be the best quarterback in the NFL on every roster, I do think he fits that roster. Cleveland 7-7-1. Imagine they had a little bit better decision making, a little bit better quarterback play from Tyrod Taylor, although should be pointed out they did start the season 2-2-1. And of course, maybe a little bit better coaching early on, and they would have been in the playoffs. Instead, they're not. And they're hoping to finish one game above 500. But I just think of Baker, and I think this dude just fits. He fits everything that the Browns and Cleveland are about. He has a massive complex about being drafted number, it's like he thinks being drafted number one overall, somehow he was slighted. That's the way Baker Mayfield works. It just is. It's the way Baker Mayfield works. He thinks somehow he was shafted. Maybe it's because Hugh Jackson didn't put him with the ones in the preseason. Maybe it's because Hugh Jackson didn't want to draft him. All of this might well be true. But, you know, in the famous words of Will Hunting, from Good Will Hunting, I got a number, how do you like them apples, right? Like, he's the starting quarterback of the Browns. Why doesn't he already like them apples? Why does he need to rub it in? And the only answer is because he's Baker Mayfield. Because they're the Browns. And while that's not a great answer anywhere else, in Cleveland, look, Cleveland used to be known as the mistake on the lake. Cleveland is the place where even people said when LeBron came back, even LeBron couldn't win a championship there. Ultimately, he did. But as great as LeBron is and was for that area, LeBron left not once, but twice, two different times. The Browns have left before. How many former Indians have left, have hit the road because they couldn't be financially compensated or they just didn't want to stay in that market size? Whereas Baker Mayfield, who Texas Tech didn't want after injury, Oklahoma wanted him, but they weren't willing to offer a scholarship immediately. And his own team, the Browns, when drafted, I'm guessing his feelings were from their then head coach, he doesn't really want me here. That had to be the way he felt. And that's why he's strutting like he's Conor McGregor. That's why he's staring down the bench like he's giving the Kobe death stare. I mean, like, he's kind of a pro wrestler in a tiny NFL quarterback's body. But in Cleveland, I think it works. And look, I pointed out, and you know, the winning 5 out of 6, they beat the Falcons, the Bengals twice, the Panthers, and the Broncos. Those are a couple of the worst teams in football, a couple of the worst defenses in football. But still, for Cleveland to be winning any games, considering they didn't win a game last year, they won one game the year before, how can you possibly take shots at it? You can't. So they're not going to make the playoffs. It's going to be on for year two. We'll see what happens with their coach. But I think it's fascinating to see a perfect fit. Not every guy can wear skinny jeans. Not every guy can wear baggy clothes. Find the guy who fits baggy clothes. Find the guy who fits skinny jeans and make sure they wear those clothes. So do you love the way Baker Mayfield acts or his act before games? Probably not. The things he says after games, would you like to manage that? Probably. Does he live and does he learn? Yes, he does. Will he get better? Absolutely. Why? Because he's got a ton of talent. He's got a big personality. He knows what he's doing.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
I watched the Saints last night. I don't know if you guys... Well, first of all, there's a couple of really good games. That's Seattle against Kansas City. That was highly entertaining, high-level football, two playoff teams. And man, was Russell Wilson impressive late with his deep balls. Right? He throws as good a deep ball as anybody in the game. And then, of course, you have Pat Mahomes. But I watch the Saints. And tell me if anybody else has this as a belief. I watch the Saints and I think to myself, you know, they get a couple of calls that go their way. Several, in fact. They get a couple of strip fumbles that go their way late. And they survive the Pittsburgh Steelers. And because they don't seem to have nearly as explosive an offense as they had to start the year or at times against inferior competition where they can create mismatches, and now that people have figured them out, I know we're supposed to believe that the Dome is some incredible home field advantage, and maybe it is, but it was loud yesterday and didn't have any real effect on the game. Just didn't. The Steelers lost the game because Juju Smith-Schuster fumbled, because their young running back fumbled as well, and because there was a couple of, at best, 50-50 calls that went their way. They didn't lose because of the crowd and because they couldn't hear and they couldn't snap the football. All of those things are things that the Pittsburgh Steelers did and allowed them to be successful, with the exception of fumbling it. And a couple of, I mean, even the last touchdown catch from the Saints was blatant offensive pass interference. But once we get to the playoffs, they call fewer and fewer defensive penalties. And the correlation I can make with the Saints is you have the MVP. I think so too will the Saints. Right? The Houston Rockets had the MVP in James Harden, even though James Harden had better seasons previously. The Saints are going to have the MVP because they had the best record with Drew Brees, even though Drew Brees has had better seasons. And just like the Houston Rockets were able to get people into foul trouble and get James Harden to line a ton in the regular season, at times they struggle in the postseason. The same is true with the Saints in that a lot of the things they were able to do and exploit, you can do in the regular season, you can't do in the postseason. You just can't. If you're going to count on turnovers, you're going to be waiting, 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 and waiting too long. If you think you're going to strip great players when they go to the ground after they've seen on tape what it looks like when guys get stripped, because inevitably they do, I got news for you. I like the Saints. I think they're a good story. I think they're a good defense. Eli Apple's still not any good. They don't run the football nearly as well as they used to. Yes, they beat the Steelers, but the Steelers were marching down to score what would have been a defining touchdown before they needed the Saints needed two or three calls to take the lead on a touchdown. And then after that lead, when the Saints start marching down the field and got into Saints Saints territory, they capitalized on a nice pass to Juju Smith-Schuster, who fumbled the football, and they ended up losing the game. I'm a process guy, and the process by which the Steelers were able to go in and execute in New Orleans tells me they're still a hell of a team in the playoffs. Rain, wind, shine, doesn't matter. That's still a heck of a team in the playoffs. And I don't know if Kansas City's come back down to earth, or if they, you know, losing your star running back that late in the season is hard to adjust to, whether it's Big Ben's age, whether it's the offensive line. I don't know enough about it. All I can tell you is I do know that they had Austin Ekeler in there, that they were trying to chip some of the bigger guys. I do know that they went to a different style in order to execute against the Saints defense. All I can tell you is this. Saints are a good team. But just like the Rockets, when the Rockets get to the playoffs, all those threes that they took, ultimately you went cold. James Harden flopping and throwing back his head every time he drives, when he gets to the playoffs, they don't call fouls. And when you're such an offensive-minded team, you got to win with your defense. And their defense is better. It's still not good. It just isn't good. It's not as good as the Cowboys' defense. It's not as good as the Seahawks' defense. I don't think it's as good as the Rams' defense. And I don't think it's as good as the Vikings' defense. They're a really good regular season team, but the postseason, I think, is a different animal, and I think that's an animal that they will struggle to work with. Like, do I think they're going to lose their first game? Maybe. Depends who they play, and we act like the Dome is some great home field advantage. Like, that thing, sometimes it is. I have no doubt it's loud. I just don't think they're constructed to take advantage defensively of the Dome. So, fascinated, though, that the Saints find a way to win that game, get home field, now get a week off, in addition to the week off that's coming with the bye week.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I think what happens is, when you're in different places, you think everybody thinks like you do. And God bless LeBron James, but in the echo chamber of his life, I think he thinks everybody thinks like he does. And how he sees the world is, hey, listen, I'm a black man who's a husband and a father, and what I see, I don't like in terms of some police interactions with African Americans. And so when I see protests for that, I believe that that should be embraced, because that's the way of life in the United States. There is this assumption that, hey, we have freedom we do have the freedom, not just freedom of speech, but also the freedom to congregate and the freedom to march and the freedom to demonstrate. Like, these are all free. This is the freedom that we have. This is what people fought for. The issue is that you don't actually have complete and total freedom. That's part of the catch-22 to it. Right? Like, we don't actually live in a pure democracy. We live in a representative democracy. We don't all go vote on everything that comes across the docket. We just don't know. We don't have time. We don't have the bandwidth. So we have a representative democracy. And it doesn't, by the way, always represent everyone in the district. It represents the majority of the people who voted in each district. We're not actually a pure capitalist society. We have regulations, lots of them, to protect ourselves from ourselves and from some of the trappings of pure capitalism. So the idea that we have complete and total freedom is, frankly, one that's really super uneducated. You can't call out fire in a theater, and you can't just demonstrate and protest whenever the hell you want. That's not actually the way it works. There's conflicting alliances. For example, it's really sticky to protest a league, to protest while representing a league, while representing other corporations. And oh yeah, by the way, you're protesting, for example, police brutality when you're protected on the field by those same men and women police officers. I know that we all want to fall in line with this thought that Colin Kaepernick is only out of the league because he protested. Do I think that that's a part of the story? I do. I also think that Kaepernick had a chance to be with the Broncos before he played the last year with the Niners. That soured the Broncos on him. I think he had a chance to be with the Ravens, and his girlfriend sent out an Instagram tweet, picture which had the owner of the Ravens, Steve Bisciotti, as a pictured as a slave owner from Django Unchained. Like, that would have been a great home for him, playing for a Harbaugh when they needed a quarterback. And yet she annihilated that. In addition, other teams got scared off by that. Dude, you can't control her. He's going to become, it's going to be a nightmare. What happens if we want to cut him? So when LeBron James had his latest version of the shop, because this is groundbreaking stuff, right? The barbershop, which we've never seen before, with the exception of the fact that Nick Saban has done it. Hundreds of others have done it. There was actually a movie called The Barbershop. Like, I understand that LeBron's trying to say, hey, no one's ever put a camera into a barbershop with people like me and people like my friends. That's one thing. But the idea that he invented barbershop conversation or filming a barbershop conversation is kind of laughable, considering there's a movie called The Shop. Here's what LeBron had to say in regards to the difference in NBA and NFL owners. Take a listen.
I mean, in the NFL, they got a bunch of old white men owning teams, and they got that slave mentality, and it's like, this is my team. You do what the I tell y'all to do, or we get rid of y'all. I'm so appreciative of our league, of our commissioner. Like, he at least want to hear us out. As long as we're doing it in a very educational, nonviolent way, then he's absolutely okay with it, because at the end of the day, the players is who make the ship go.
Look, for the record, plenty of owners supported the players' protest in the NFL. It's my belief, and the belief of most people, that the owners, while many of us understand what is and why it's being protested, there's also a pushback from the paying public. Like, this is just simply the customer is always right. That's it. The customer is always right. And enough customers and enough corporations said, hey, gotta knock this out. People don't like it. You can sit, this is like when people try and tell you, well, you know, life's not a popularity contest. Maybe not, but being popular sure makes things easier. It sure makes things easier. I'm not disputing that sometimes you can be stopped from doing the right thing because you got to sell. Yeah, we all kind of got to sell out a little bit. A little bit. Both sides have to sell out a little bit. Because corporations are, and many of them are, scared of any sort of major controversy or pushback. But that's not a slave owner mentality. A slave owner mentality, like, what are we... look, that's intentionally incendiary trigger words. That's what that is. The slave owner mentality. Like, no, it's not. Slave owner mentality is I own you. You will do what I want when I want. That's not what the owners do. The owners employ players, employ coaches, employ general managers. Many of them are hands-off. Not all of them are all white. Not all of them are old. Some of them have inherited the company. Some of them have bought the team. Carolina Panthers are just purchased. Shad Khan of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's an immigrant, came from nothing. I mean, you go around, there's a myriad of different stories based upon different ownership groups and different people running the teams. And many of them reflect their constituency. Like even in the NBA, there's no protesting because they have the same rule in the NBA they have in the NFL. And there's this sense, oh man, see NBA players, they get to wear what they want, do what they want. Yes, they do. In the pregame. In pregame warmups, they have their shirts. You know, they come in, they do their walk-in. Guess who else has that? The NFL. NFL, you can wear whatever your cleats you want in the pregame. And by the way, the NFL, for everyone decrying how these men run their business, it's more successful than the NBA. It's not really close. Now, they have fewer games, so the ratings are higher. But by and large, the viewing public has spoken, and in comparison to the NBA, the Super Bowl pales it by comparison. Paled in comparison. So, like, don't go to a slave owner mentality. You can say these guys or some guys are bad bosses or they need to change their messaging, but that's not even close. Even Jerry Jones, this idea, well, you do it my way or the highway. Tell me the player he cut. All of these teams have had players that have protested. Their reaction was, hey, we're listening to our fans, and enough of our fans have said, this is not what I came to an NFL game to see. You know what's funny about it? This is ironic about it. I do a sports radio show. If I talked about my belief in God once a day, my bosses would call me in and say, listen, I have no problem with your belief in God. I'm happy that you're on the same wavelength as your religion, that you want to live by what you read in the Bible. But you know what? We'd prefer if you didn't share it on air because we have enough listeners who turn into sports radio and don't want to hear about God. Don't believe me? How many times have you heard an interview where a guy starts talking about God this and God that, and you just start rolling your eyes? Oh boy. Why? Because I turned in to hear about quarterback play or about his coach or about his mom or about his dad or about something goofy that happened that I didn't know about. I didn't want to hear about God. You know why? I can hear about God when I go to church on Sundays. The same is true with kneeling in political stances and protesting police brutality. You can be as heroic as you want, but you have to understand that at least a percentage of the viewers, of the listeners, tune in on a Sunday and they don't want to be bothered by politics. No matter how much they agree with you, it ends up turning them off. Like, look, I get enough of it. There's CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, as well as all the local channels. And we talk so much about politics now. It's just, even for somebody like me, and I love political science, it's enough. And once you start to say slave owner mentality, you lose people. When you make $40 million a year, when you're worth over $100, $200, $300 million, and you start talking about a sport that you don't play, that has the same rules for the national anthem that yours have, you just sound like somebody who, like, I kind of have a dream job my whole life, and I don't really want to be told what to do, even if it's in a sport where you kind of have to be told what to do. Is there a way to get guys to do it and ask nicely? Sure, sometimes. And sometimes you don't have time to ask questions. Do we want you to do, or we'll find somebody who will? Mo in San Diego, you're on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Go ahead, Mo.
I'm sorry. real quick, I jump into this. The thing about pro sports that's different from most corporations is two sides. Number one, most corporations are built by profits. Their whole goal is profits. In pro sports, you have two objectives. One is profits, but the other is to win. And they don't always stay, and they don't always work together. They're sometimes mutually exclusive, as you know, in some teams. The other side is the player relationship.
Don't hang up real quick. There's another part to it. It's a really smart point you make. Let me make an additional one to it. Sometimes you're going to make money in the value of the franchise, right?
Yep.
And you're not going to make money in a year to year, and yep. while there is fans believe, well, hey, you're making money. Remember, in order to make the money on the value of the franchise, you have to sell it. So we're telling owners, hey, you should be okay not making money and selling something that you don't want to sell. I don't want to sell it. I want to make money on it. So it's there's a lot to it that's different than other corporations. You are correct.
Right. And the other side is the player side and the relationship there. The players are employees in a sense that they're paid by. But it's not an employee W-2 relationship. It is a partnership between the players and the owners. They share in the revenue and the profit. They're partners. They market the players market the equipment or the sport to bring in revenue. The other thing is the players are also they're the product. So this is a different business model.
Mo, nobody's arguing that it's a different business model, but the idea is still the same. Remember, if you have almost all of these men who own professional sports teams, regardless of sport, they were really, you have to make that much money, you either have to inherit it and or be super, super successful in business. And so you run a team like a business, just like you run a team.
Correct.
It's no different than how you coach a team. You have to have a pecking order. You have to have rules, and you have to have a boss that says, either you do this or I have to find somebody who does. That part does translate regardless.
Yes, it does. But the difference is what LeBron is talking about, okay, and I haven't always agreed with things that he said, but what he's talking about is, he used a bad term, but what he's saying is, the NBA, it feels more like a partnership.
Yes.
And more like they respect him as a product. And that's because of scarcity of goods. That's an economics thing. Football, there's a less of a scarcity of goods because of the size of the rosters and the talent level is different. But he's saying football, it doesn't feel like the players are partners. It feels like they're only employees and people look at them as employees but not partners in the business of the NFL. But in the NBA, they feel more like a partnership, so they have a say-so and a voice, and that is the whole slave thing that he's talking about. The slave thing is the employees.
You know, listen, I understand it, but again, the NBA and the NFL are it's a, you bring up good points, okay? But part of it is true. Look, the NFL is a worse profession to be in because you are nameless, faceless. Nobody knows who you are. If you're 6'4" and you're 260 pounds, and you walk in and said, I played in the NFL for 10 years, guys be like, okay, you know why? Because I don't really, unless, you know, we know like one guy's name on an offensive line. We know more now because of Madden than we used to, but we don't really know. No, that's the nature of the sport. But the idea that owners should somehow act like, oh, listen, are you guys okay with it? Like, that's not the way the world works. And really, while LeBron James is sitting there saying how great Adam Silver is, I will tell you right now, I know people in the National Football League who think the NBA is a joke because there's plenty of owners in the NBA that are pissed. You know, they're pissed because they're talking about where Anthony Davis is going to go next when Anthony Davis is under contract for 2 years. That's a poorly run sport when one of the superstars in your sport is trying to get out of a contract that he signed in good faith and let it be known that somebody can come and get him. Like, who does that? That's a terribly run business. And so LeBron might think, hey, this is a great, really well-run business. But the fact is that you're cannibalizing your own franchises. That's why it's hard to sell those other franchises, because now it costs a crazy amount of money to get in. You don't make that much money. And if you have a good player, many of them aren't loyal and they're going to try and get out of there. It's a hard thing to swallow. So LeBron, you know, lushing praise on Adam Silver and casting a shadow on the NFL. It's a completely different sport. But I also want to point this out, and this is important before we get to a break. And you can call 877-99-FOX. I think what happens is there are people that believe, well, Jerry Jones, I don't think that he's a racist, but this idea that he's a racist, like, boy, he's made a lot of black men rich and kept them gainfully employed long after they ran out of usefulness to him, simply because they're a cowboy and he knows they're better off being some part of the organization than on the street. But Jerry Jones reacting to the president, I think a lot of people freak out when they talk to the president and the scare tactics of, and the president honestly has a winning topic there. It's one of the few wins for him. There's a portion of NFL fans in the flyover states, in the South, hell, even in where I live in Orange County, California, that they don't like it when you protest their flag and they will not purchase your product and you're not helping them purchase your product. It's the old Republicans buy sneakers too. That's really what Jerry Jones and other owners are saying. It's a fascinating conversation.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I want to catch up with Alex Marvez, SiriusXM NFL radio host. He joins us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Let's start with the MVP discussion. Value is a hard word. Who's had the best season of any quarterback in the NFL?
We're going to Breeze or Mahomes here, right? As a toss-up. Yeah. And Doug, I'm still undecided. I'm one of the 50 voters for this thing, and I'm really going round and round with this. And it's going to be difficult because I'm going to be judging Patrick Mahomes based upon 17 games as opposed, I think, with Drew Brees in 16 games, because Sean Payton can talk about prepping all he wants for New Orleans season finale against Carolina, but it doesn't matter. The game's irrelevant when it comes to New Orleans having that number one overall seed in the postseason. So, you know, at this point, do I judge Patrick Mahomes, who's had an unbelievable, you know, start to his NFL career? The fact that he threw 11 touchdown passes in the first three games of the season, nobody else had done that. The fact he has 49 of them right now, and the fact he's thrown 31 of them on the road, which is an NFL record as well. Or do I go with Drew Brees, the first team to clinch home field advantage during the playoffs? They had that late season lull, four games where he passed for under 200 yards, but you see Drew continue to come up big for his team yesterday against the Pittsburgh Steelers, throwing the game-winning touchdown pass to win this game. So I'm really up in the air. I'm not sure who I'm going to go with quite yet. I don't want it to be a lifetime achievement award for Drew Brees. And that's, you know, because we have to judge it based upon this season. But, man, their body of work is so good. I may be leaning toward Brees, but I might be convinced to go otherwise, depending upon what happens Sunday with Mahomes.
All right, pretty good chance the Chiefs have home field advantage throughout. They're the opposite of the Saints, right? They have an incredible home field, but for whatever reason, the playoffs, it hasn't been a home field advantage. Right. On the other hand, the Saints, that place rocks, and they play better at home. Neither team is what they used to be, although with Ted Ginn back, you could make the argument that maybe now they have the speed returning on the offensive side of the football opposite Mike Thomas. We'll see. Which team do you think is better poised to make a run in the playoffs?
The Saints by far, and Ted Ginn Jr.'s impact huge in this game against the Steelers, and you saw it loosen some things up for other players. Five catches for 72 yards, but Ted Ginn Jr. being on the field, this is why the Saints signed Dez Bryant. This is why they signed Brandon Marshall when Dez got hurt. They realized they had a problem at wide receiver. They weren't sure exactly when they were getting Ted Ginn Jr. back. Fortunately for him, for them and him, the rehab worked out okay, so it's another weapon for the Saints and Drew Brees. You know, having to win two games in the Superdome, they are undefeated in the postseason in the Superdome when in the Sean Payton, Drew Brees era. You talk about Kansas City's problems at Arrowhead Stadium. 0-6 they are in playoff games at Arrowhead Stadium. Haven't won there since the Joe Montana era back in about 1993. So I don't trust the Chiefs because of their defense. The Saints, their defense is okay. Is it great? No, but it's pretty good at times. It's good otherwise, and their offense is obviously really darn good. For Kansas City, they're getting gouged both ways. They're getting gouged. Last night it was Seattle running for 210 yards on 43 carries. The week before, it's Phillip Rivers slicing slicing and dicing. And I know Eric Berry's return, but he's not the Band-Aid that's going to heal everything that's happened with the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't trust that defense. Look, it's a matchup type of thing, and I don't know who either of these teams is going to be facing in round two. There are some teams that may give them more trouble than others. For example, you saw with Dallas and their defense, they have some things that they can do well against the New Orleans Saints, and Kansas City's clearly had their struggles. Ravens push them to overtime. The Chargers beat them on their home field. You know, so there's, again, those types of things go into consideration, but I think New Orleans the better team with the home field advantage.
Yeah, and I don't think Kansas City's the same since you lose a running back like they lost. You're gonna struggle to replace that type of talent.
But the thing is, though, Doug, they've only look at the four losses. They scored 51 points, 40 points, 31 points last night, 28 against the Chargers. The points aren't the problem for them.
The defense. No, I agree, but you also, if you run the football, you can keep the ball away from the defense. So you can keep the ball away from the defense a little bit. I might be crazy, but I don't have any fear of going into New England this year. Now, look, I'm not willing to call the dynasty completely over, but I mean, you know, Gronk had nothing yesterday, no catches yesterday. Ball goes through his hands for a pick. Brady looked awful. Some reports are that he's got an injured knee. I don't know, but you know, like, look, I think the Chargers are better. I think the Ravens are better. I think the Steelers are better. I have a tough time buying into the Texans. I think the Colts are better. Tell me I'm wrong that I don't fear the Patriots the way I should have a healthy fear for the Patriots.
Well, you could still be crazy and be right about the Patriots. I want to make sure that those points are not incongruent. So I just want to make sure, Doug, you know, for those of us who know you a little bit, yes, understood. Listen, the thing with the Patriots is this now, and with the Philadelphia Eagles beating Houston the way it is, I look at this as a two-game season for the Patriots. I really do. You got to win two games at home. They haven't lost a second-round playoff game in Foxborough since 2010. They always seem to win. Are they more vulnerable than before, potentially? Absolutely. But you give the Patriots a week to rest up, a week to game plan where they don't have to worry about winning and losing, and it's just going to give them a very distinct advantage over whomever comes into Gillette Stadium. I mean, look, can they go on the road if they have to play at Kansas City or Los Angeles in the AFC Championship game? I'm not so sure about that. They're not as good a team on the road. We saw it this season, losing to Miami, even though it was a fluke, but they still gave up a lot of points in that game, made a lot of mistakes, and then losing to Pittsburgh the way that they did. You're right about Gronk. It's painful to watch. The fourth time in his career he finished a game without any catches, but he can still block. And here's the thing about the Patriots that separates them from so many other teams in the NFL. When adversity hits them, like what Josh Gordon did, they adjust. They ran for 273 yards against a really good Bills defense. They can win in different ways. It's not going to be pretty. It's not that they're not going to get style points like previous Patriots teams, but are they good enough to get to a Super Bowl? In my mind, yes.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Alex Marvez, host for NFL on Sirius XM NFL Radio. Sorry, Alex, this is my fifth hour of live national radio here today. And no, I don't get time and a half. I look at the Cowboys, and I think Jason Garrett's done an amazing job. Obviously, was it helped by going out and getting a talented wide receiver? Yes. But I think he knew what he had in his team, and he just had to get it kind of all right. Like, he knew that Dak's not great, but, you know, in the right circumstances, he can be really good and play to the strength of running game, defense. They shored up some of that offensive line. Some of it's gotten healthy. I think Jason Garrett's done an amazing job with his team. Tell me I'm crazy.
No, Doug, I'm amazed. You're the first person that's ever said anything nice about Jason Garrett outside of me and Gil Brandt, I think. It's amazing. I'm very happy to hear this on airwaves somewhere. You know, the Jason Garrett that you get, you know, that you may see on the sideline, you know, with the demeanor and clapping his hands and things like that and the milquetoast type of news conferences, that's not the Jason Garrett you get behind the scenes. This is one competitive human being. It allowed him to survive in the NFL for more than a decade as a backup quarterback. You know, those guys are wired differently, and Jason is. And, you know, but it's interesting how you go into the season and you're thinking, okay, you put your eggs in the Sean Lee basket to a certain extent. He gets hurt again, but you have Leighton Vander Esch. No one could have predicted Leighton was going to be notching 150-something tackles this season. He's been unbelievable. And I don't think anyone would have thought the Cowboys go into the season thinking that they're going to fire their offensive line coach when the year begins. But they end up doing just that, switching back to the type of blocking system that led them to success before, and then the Amari Cooper trade, which just looks better and better and better as each week goes by because it trickles down upon the rest of the team. So So you give Jason Garrett some weapons, and yeah, things are really good, you know, for this team right now. Look, and they're locked into that four seed. It's interesting. They have a chance now to rest their players against the New York Giants. I think that's going to be advantageous for them as well. I mean, Zeke Elliott, 2,001 yards from scrimmage. I mean, that is an amazing, amazing stat for him. Sit him against the Giants, rest up, get ready for the Seattle Seahawks to come to town, and that could be the show stealer, that type of game, in week one of the postseason.
I can't buy the Texans. Can you?
Yesterday hurts. Well, you know why I'm having a hard time buying them? It's because of these injuries too, right? I mean, you know, look, you lose Demaryius Thomas now. Kiki Cutie with his hamstring, he's not necessarily good to go. The offensive line, as you could tell, really struggled yesterday against the Eagles in that wide nine attack. I mean, look, they get one home game. You know, they're guaranteed that for winning the division. Well, if they win the division, by the way, because the Colts could still sneak in there. If Jacksonville plays like they did against the Dolphins and pulls off the win and Indianapolis beats Tennessee, well, then it's the Indianapolis Colts winning the AFC South. So the Texans aren't even guaranteed a home game yet. It's hard to trust them. They don't have a history of a lot of success in the postseason. They've never made it past the second round. I think it's a team that has a lot of potential for the future. But, you know, for this year, after that loss yesterday, that was just so devastating. And that's something Bill O'Brien's going to have to talk to his players about, because they may be thinking, oh, wow, all is lost. We don't have home field advantage. He's got to make sure his guys are mentally right heading into this key stretch here, week 17 and beyond.
Their offensive line got destroyed, but and they didn't play well. But I'm still buying the Chargers, and I'll tell you why. I still feel like if Antonio Gates didn't fumble, they win that game. Mm-hmm. And like, look, the Ravens defense was amazing. I mean, they just dominated the line of scrimmage. That was the story of that game. But you know, they add Austin Eckler back. They add Hunter Henry. They still have two tremendous rush ends. And Derwin James is likely the defensive rookie of the year. I'm still a buyer into the Chargers, even if they have to go on the road every game. Am I too much of a homer having seen them play in person several times?
No, well, they go on the road every week, so what's the difference, right?
Yeah.
For them. And I mean, I'm not being sarcastic. That's how they're wired, and that's the way Anthony Lynn has gotten their mental approach. And look, they got beat by a good Ravens team. I don't think we should disparage the Ravens and what they did, and they beat a hot Chargers club. But I think just one of the reasons to love the Chargers is that they're sound across the board. It's not like with Kansas City where you say, oh, they got this great offense, but they can't stop anybody. No, the Chargers can stop some folks. You know, they've got a pretty darn good defense by and large. You know, Michael Badgley has solved the kicking problem that they've had for so long. And look, I know Phillip Rivers has had he's thrown two interceptions in each of the past two games. You would like to think that that's going to change. Keenan Allen, getting him back healthy for the postseason is huge. Melvin Gordon, getting him back is huge. You mentioned Austin Eckler. And, of course, Anthony Lynn has a decision to make coming up on Sunday, you know, as they prepare to head to Denver. Do you play these injured guys? Do you put guys out there that you're going to just maybe, you know, like you saw Melvin Gordon, he had, 12 carries, but he just wasn't quite right against the Ravens. Do you sit him, even though knowing if the Chiefs lose to Oakland, that you have that chance to get that number one seed? I think that Anthony Lynn's got to err on the side of caution. Just accept the fact you had your chance at the wild card. You didn't get it done. Hope that you can beat Denver without some of these key players, but start resting some guys. Get ready for week one of the playoffs. Hope you get hot and roll from there.
Alex Marvez, you can listen to him on Sirius XM NFL Radio. Alex, great stuff. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Doug. Appreciate you, brother.
The pleasure is mine.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.